Hey, all you Tolkien heads, I'm David Gaddy.
And I'm Jeremiah Orr from the Theonauts Podcast. And you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast with your hosts, Michael, Micah, and Brendan.
Right here on the GCT Network, your Great Commission transmission.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the last homely house in Rivendell, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 18. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, Strider has said it all along, don't lose hope, persevere. In Elrond's house, there is comfort. Now that we've arrived, does it remind you of someplace you've heard about many times before? Let's see. We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here at the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Gentlemen, we had to skip last week, so we've gone a whole week without an episode. And Brendan, you had a little schooling emergency there.
Yes, yes. For listeners that don't know, I'm in grad school right now, wrapping that up. And instead of a thesis, what my department offered was what they called a comprehensive exam. So it was basically two eight-page essays that I did in lieu of a thesis statement or a thesis research project. And one of the papers got sent back.
Oh, oh no.
So Friday, we had planned on recording last Friday, and I was checking my student email Friday morning, and I saw that email, and of course my heart sank, my world crashed, and
emergency.
I had to reread Hamlet, start from scratch. Of course, a lot of it could have been avoided had I, you know, read the prompt correctly.
Oh, reading. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference.
Reading helps.
Yeah.
Who would have known?
But that has all been sorted, and you know, this past Wednesday, I sent in the rewritten essay, and then Thursday heard back and said, well, this is much better. Congratulations, you've passed.
Oh!
So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
You're kidding.
So you are wrapping up school
forever? Wrapping it up. I would like to pursue a doctorate, but...
What's involved in that?
Just much more research. But, and you know, it'll just depend on where I go, I guess, but... I would much rather try to secure a job and get the basics out of the way first before I go any further. So,
well, congratulations.
Oh, thanks, man.
Micah, have you been up to anything?
Yeah, I'm stage managing for a play at the Teen Actors Guild at the Manchester Arts Center.
What play?
Is that Mattress?
Once Upon a Mattress,
yeah.
Not a fan of the show, but we're performing it well, I think, so.
Well, good. And that's actually why you chose to pursue the stage management for this production, huh?
Well, that and I don't really like the Teen Actors Guild, but that's just because I don't like teenagers.
But now, Brendan, as a theater practitioner, give Micah a little bit of a boost there. Isn't it a good idea to pursue all the various aspects of theater production and performance?
Oh, yeah. But I think Micah knows that.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
it was really for the benefit of listeners out there.
Yeah. Oh!
Yeah, gotcha. Brendan, here, wait, is it a good idea?
Micah was just the surrogate there.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, well, it is a good thing, though, because, you know, theater isn't just acting. Theater is really an all-encompassing art form. Mm-hmm. So whether you're... And, okay, so when I say art, I'm bringing to it the classic definition of technique. There is a technique to producing things.
Is that why Socrates or Plato and those ancient Greek philosophers would refer to almost anything that you did as an art?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Like you could say...
The art of husbandry.
Yeah, there's the art of woodcraft. Yes. The art of managing a stage. The art of changing lights for a stage, the art of running a sound booth. There are specific techniques that go into this whole experience, mm-hmm. And when the crux of theater, it's almost like the crux of it is placed on the end result. Not a lot of attention goes to the process of it unless you're on the inside already. And it's when once you're on the inside, you see how much work goes into producing this this show or this play that only that may only play like for the Fly or for the Mac for a few weekends.
Yeah.
But that's on top of months worth of rehearsal and months worth of planning and all the technique that goes into that just to bolster that moment.
What about the technique and the planning and the rehearsal that goes into something such as the Fellowship of the Ring, J.R.R. Tolkien's, you know, legendarium as a whole? You know, I've been reading a lot of out of the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, mm-hmm. and anybody that has not procured a copy of that, you need a copy of that, and you can read Tolkien all along the way. And right now, I'm in the midst of all of these letters that were written to his son Christopher, while Christopher was off during World War II, and he was in Africa, and Tolkien is sharing all along the way chapters as he is as he's crafting them, and he keeps telling Christopher, "Yeah, let me get these last couple of chapters typed up to you, and I'll send them to you right away. Oh, by the way, I wish that you were here right now. I need your work on the maps," because Christopher Tolkien did a lot of the work on the maps and just that collaboration. But you know, the life of Tolkien and you know, he would spend his morning writing, and he doesn't get into big specifics, but he'll say, "Yes, I wrote this chapter this morning." You know, you're thinking, "You wrote, I mean, it takes us two episodes to go through many of these chapters," yeah. and you wrote it in a morning, and then he'll end up rewriting it or working different parts, and you can see his thought process about, oh, you know what, I'm at this point right now, and I have to figure out how to pull all the strings together for this mm-hmm. for this climax, some of these letters that he's writing. But, and it's just fantastic. Okay, so I was writing in the morning, then in the afternoon, met with C.S. Lewis and, you know, whoever else and the Inklings and everything and read them these chapters.
Went to go have a pint.
Yes. Yeah. So, Brendan, I mean, when you have that kind of insight, reading Tolkien, okay, A, the man was obviously a genius.
Right? Obviously.
You know, and so sometimes we'll just gloss over the fact that he was a philologist, right? That's... yeah, he's talking about, oh, I wrote, and then I worked in the garden a little bit. Oh, I had two lectures, mm-hmm. you know, and all these things. Are you gaining a deeper appreciation for the professor as we are working our way through these chapters?
I am, yeah.
You know what we're going to see today? His command of poetic imagery. We were talking before the mics were hot, and you were mentioning when we get to a certain section in this book, and so many sentences are given dedicated yeah. to one person, then this many more to another, and then you when you get to this final person, we won't let the cat out of the bag just yet. You know, 50 sentences to this person, and I mean, aren't you just impressed with the majesty of the language that yeah. he uses?
It's very well crafted. It's well sculpted. It's just
art.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. So talking about that art, and he was an artist with words. He's an artist with pen and paper and paint. I'm going to transition for you that are watching on Twitch here, twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast. Here on the screen now, you'll see one of his drawings, one of his pieces of art for Rivendell. And Rivendell happens to be where we find ourselves. And this chapter.
And that's something that he drew himself.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Where did we leave off?
Oh, Michael, we left off on one heck of a cliffhanger.
Oh, really?
One heck of a cliffhanger, yes. One might say. We last left off, it was the end of book one, and Frodo was fainting fast.
He's fading.
I'm backing up to the end of the chapter so we can cap it off. There we go. Okay. Let's see. And with his last failing senses, Frodo heard cries, and it seemed to him that he saw, beyond the riders that hesitated on the shore, a shining figure of white light. And behind it ran small, shadowy forms waving flames that flared red in the gray mist that was falling over the world. The black horses were filled with madness, and leaping forward in terror, they bore their riders away into the rushing flood. Their piercing cries were drowned in the roaring of the river. as it carried them away. Then Frodo felt himself falling, and the roaring and confusion seemed to rise and engulf him together with his enemies. Huh. He heard and saw no more.
That is a cliffhanger!
Man.
What happens?
So good. Well, what happens is what the business of this chapter is all about. Chapter 13, many meetings. Frodo...
Chapter 1 of book 2.
Excuse me.
Right, Micah? We're doing that naming
let's
convention.
Keep that. Okay. I like it.
Nomenclature.
Yes.
No new Numenoreans. No new man... Whatever.
Come on back.
Okay.
Come back. He's fading. He's fading. I've been pierced with a Morgul blade.
There's a splinter.
He's between worlds. Oh,
I thought that was really cool, but we'll talk about that when we get
there.
All right. Chapter 1, Book 2, Many Meetings. Frodo woke and found himself lying in bed. At first, he thought he had slept late after a long, unpleasant dream that still hovered on the edge of memory. Or perhaps he had been ill. But the ceiling looked strange. It was flat and it had dark beams richly carved. He lay a little while longer looking at patches of sunlight on the wall and listening to the sound of a waterfall.
It was a hideous dream. Where am I? Where am I? What is the time?
In the house of Elrond, and it is 10 o'clock in the morning.
Gandalf.
Yes, I am here. And you're lucky to be here, too, after all the absurd things you've done since you left.
A nice little clip from the 1981 BBC radio series of The Lord of the Rings, and that was Ian Holm as Frodo Baggins, and the fantastic Michael Hordam as Gandalf. Two Shakespearean actors... in their own rights. If you haven't listened to the dramatization of that from 1981, do yourselves a favor and get a copy of that. It's just amazing. I like to compare all the different iterations, all the different versions of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and things and compare them all and see who... Peter Jackson, what did you go to as your as your source material? And a lot of it follows this BBC production. So, yes, he doesn't know where he is. Mm-hmm. Did I wake from an unpleasant dream or from an illness? But, lo, that's not the ceiling of Bag End. Where am I? And then he hears that wonderful voice, that voice he has been longing to hear for a long time.
Yeah.
For a long, long time and through many adventures.
Many absurd things, one might say.
Gandalf!
Gandalf, cried Frodo, sitting up. There was the old wizard sitting in the chair by the window, by the open window. Yes, he said, I am here. And you are lucky to be here, too, after all the absurd things you have done since you left home. Frodo lay down again. He felt too comfortable and peaceful to argue, and in any case, he did not think he would get the better of an argument. He was fully awake now, and the memory of his journey was returning. The disastrous shortcut through the old forest, the accident at the Prancing Pony, and his madness in putting on the ring in the dell under Weathertop.
Mm.
And while he was thinking all these things, and trying in vain to bring his memory down to his arriving in Rivendell, there was a long silence, broken only by the soft puffs of Gandalf's pipe, as he blew white smoke rings out the window. Where's Sam? Frodo asked at length. Are the others all right? Yes, they're safe and sound, answered Gandalf. Sam was here until I sent him off to get some rest about half an hour ago. Just real quick, let's pause and talk. One of the tricks in writing one of the courses I took over the summer, or I have been taking over the summer, is playwriting. And one of the tricks that our instructor was saying, hey, you know, try this out, see what it does for you. Always look at the first things that your character says, or that a character says.
Why?
The first things in that particular scene, because it helps you, as the audience or as the reader in this case, it helps you identify with where he is, with where that character is, he or she, but he as Frodo in this case. So the first things that he says first, and I'm counting this as one line, even though technically it's two questions. Where am I and what is the time? There's ultimately that sense of confusion, which Tolkien beautifully already has painted a picture for us. And then he says, Gandalf, with that exclamation. He's excited to see Gandalf. And the very next thing he says is, where's Sam? So you can, just by seeing those three things, and then the question finishes, and are the others all right? But Sam is the one he names by name.
Yes.
And you can just tell.
Sam's the one that he wants.
Yeah, it's just that brief insight into what Frodo cares about and who he cares about. And that's not saying that he doesn't care about Merry or Pippin. It's just that the bond with Sam. Yeah, the bond with Sam is so much stronger. That's exactly where he goes to. You've got the question, you know, where am I? What time is it? He's trying to figure something out for himself. He's responding to the natural stimuli that he's seeing that he doesn't recognize. Then you've got the Gandalf exclamation. He responds to what he hears. But then his first thought to himself is, or his first thought out loud is, where's Sam?
Huh.
And it's just, I just find that really, really poignant.
Oh, you know what? And you're going to love, spoilers. It'd be spoilers, spoilers, spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam and Frodo. Mr. Frodo.
It only gets better. We'll just say that.
Yeah, it just gets.
Well, I can imagine.
So, well said. Thank you for pointing that out.
Hey, where's Sam? Frodo asked at length. And are the others all right? Yes, they are sound and safe. Safe and sound, answered Gandalf. Sam was here till I sent him off to get some rest about half an hour ago. And then he asks, what happened at the ford, said Frodo. It all seems so dim somehow, and it still does.
Well, yes, it would, and you are beginning to fade, answered Gandalf. The wound was overcoming you at last. A few more hours and you would have been beyond our aid, but you have some strength in you, my dear hobbit. As you showed in the barrow. That was touch and go, perhaps the most dangerous moment of all. I wish you could have held out a Weathertop. I'm adapting a Gandalfian voice.
Is that nice?
It's immersing me.
Well played. Yes, artistic. You're crafting that well.
Well, as it goes on, Gandalf already knows more than he's letting Frodo know. So Frodo then starts asking, well, what all do you know? You know, where have you been during this whole time? What happened to you? And we've come to find out that Gandalf was held captive. He doesn't say exactly with what yet. Yes. And one thing with this chapter is that we talk about the building of anticipation of us, the audience, finally knowing what happens. And we'll talk later with other characters, specifically Gloin. You know, we get that digging into the ground only to find out, okay, we got to keep digging in the next chapter. But yes, Gandalf was held captive.
Yes, I, Gandalf the Grey, the wizard said solemnly.
There are many powers in the world, for good and for evil. Some are greater than I am. Against some I have not been measured, but my time is coming.
My time is coming.
There it is. The Morgul Lord and his Black Riders have come forth, and war is preparing. Then we go on. There's that brief little recap of the riders being the Ringwraiths. And Frodo expresses his fondness for Aragorn. Yes, said Frodo, it was Strider that saved us. Yet I was afraid of him at first. Sam never quite trusted him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Not
at any rate until we met Glorfindel. And Gandalf smiled.
I've heard all about Sam, he said. He has no more doubts now.
Well, I'm glad, said Frodo, for I have become very fond of Strider. Well, fond is not the right word. I mean, he is dear to me, though he is strange and grim at times. In fact, he reminds me often of you. That's hilarious.
Yes.
and I didn't know that any of the big people were like that. I thought, well, they were just big and rather stupid. Kind and stupid like Butterbur, or stupid and wicked like Bill Ferny. But we don't know much about men in the Shire except for the Brelanders.
You don't know even much about them. If you think old Bodyman is stupid, said Gandalf, he is wise enough on his own ground. He thinks less than he talks.
Bumper sticker right there.
And slower. He thinks less than he talks, and slower. And yet, he can see through a brick wall at time, as they say.
In time. So another proverb from Bree.
Yeah. God, that one's good. He can see through a brick wall. But there are few left in Middle-earth like Aragorn, son of Arathorn. The race of the kings over the sea is nearly at an end. And it may be that this War of the Ring will be their last adventure.
Okay, read that again. Let me read it. You just pay attention.
Okay.
But there are few left in Middle-earth like Aragorn, son of Arathorn. The race of the kings from over the sea is nearly at an end. It may be that this War of the Ring will be their last adventure. Whose last adventure? The race of the kings from over the sea. Whose... their race, their line is nearly at an end. Very, very important thing there. Do you really mean that Strider is one of the people of the old kings? Said Frodo in wonder. I thought they had all vanished long ago. I thought he was only a ranger.
Only a ranger, cried Gandalf. My dear Frodo, that's just what the rangers are. The last remnant in the north of the great people. The men of the west. They have helped me before, and I shall need their help in the days to come, for we have reached Rivendell, but the ring is not yet at rest.
That's a good little personification there.
I like it. I like it.
Yes, I think I got to get used to this. Back and forth. Back and forth. Well, I suppose not, said Frodo, but so far my only thought has been to get here. And I hope I shan't have to go any further. It is pleasant just to rest, and I've had a month of exile and adventure, and I find that that has been as much as I want. Then he fell and shut his eyes, and after a while he spoke again. I have been reckoning that I can't bring the total up to October 24th. It ought to be the 21st. We must have reached the ford by the 20th. Skipping a little further, well, 4 days... and 3 nights, to be exact, Frodo. The elves brought you from the ford on the night of the 20th, and that is where you lost count.
So he's been out.
He's been out for
four days.
For 4 days and 3 nights, to be exact. we have been terribly anxious, and Sam has hardly left your side day or night.
Except to run messages.
Mm-hmm. Elrond is the master of healing.
Is
a master of healing, but the weapons of our enemy are deadly. To tell you the truth, I had very little hope, for I suspected that there was some fragment of the blade still in the closed wound.
And so they got that little splinter out and melted it down or whatever to get rid of it. And it was Elrond that was able to do that. And Frodo shuddered, remembering the cruel knife with notched blade that had vanished in Strider's hand. Don't be alarmed, said Gandalf. It is gone now. It has been melted. And it seems that hobbits fade very reluctantly.
I have known of strong warriors of the big people who would quickly have been overcome by that splinter, which you bore for 17 days.
Tells us a lot about our little...
That's really impressive.
Yes!
And if anything, it makes us think of Bilbo once again.
In what way?
Well, because how long did he have the ring? Oh. When he stole it from Smeagol?
Yes, many, many years.
Well, steal.
They had it for 50 years. Yeah, 60 years.
Yeah, 60 years. And then how hard it was for him to give it up. But even then, he was still able to.
And Gandalf was impressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Hmm. Speaking of Bilbo. Oh, wait, that's later on.
Mm-hmm.
spoiler alert!
What would they have done to me, asked Frodo. And what were the riders trying to do? Well, they tried to pierce your heart with a Morgul knife, which remains in the wound. If they had succeeded, you would have become like they are, only weaker and under their control.
You would have become a wraith under the dominion of the Dark Lord, and he would have tormented you for trying to keep his ring, if any greater torment were possible than being robbed of it, and seeing it on his hand. I think it's interesting how the Morgul Blade is meant to splinter, and is meant to have its lasting effect in that splinter, which apparently the wraiths were aiming for the heart. And even Gandalf continues, "Yes, fortune and fate have helped you," said Gandalf, "not to mention courage, for your heart was not terribly touched, and only your shoulder was pierced, and that was because you resisted to the last. But it was a terribly narrow shave, so to speak. You were in gravest peril while you wore the ring, for then you were half in the wraith world yourself, and they might have seized you. You could see them, and they could see you." I like how that establishes this two worlds existing at the same time.
That's really interesting to me. That, and actually, until we started, like, you know, examining these chapters, I didn't really even pay any heed to that there's a wraith world and a mortal world, so to speak.
You just illustrated what one of the purposes and one of the benefits of doing the show that the way that we're doing it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. We do hear from people, hey, you know what, I've read them and I know the stories and I love them, but I haven't examined it that deeply. And we're really doing a surface level job. If you want to get into the, you know, the real nitty gritty, you go over and listen to the Tolkien professor, Corey Olson, you know, getting into languages and, you know, such as that. I mean, just fantastic, fascinating things. But as we are looking deeper into these, let me take this opportunity to ask the question. I see the time. I see what's going on. Do we have any illusions of finishing this chapter?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so.
Okay, then I'll stop worrying about it.
there's so much going on here.
There is.
And there's really not that much action happening in the story. This is all catch up. This is all the settling of accounts.
And we're getting so much information.
Yeah, but that's what this chapter is meant for.
Yeah.
Because in the next chapter, I haven't even started reading it. I just saw the title.
Yeah.
It's one we've been hyping it up this whole time.
Oh, goodness.
It's going to be like 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Well, nobody has complained yet.
No, not yet.
So.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But no, getting back to the idea of the two worlds existing at the same time, you know, Frodo even asked later on, further down on, I'm on 232, or 222.
Okay.
In the Kindle.
The Kindle Jenner version?
Yes. Oh, stop.
Oh.
What about Rivendell and the elves? Is Rivendell safe? Well, yes, at present, until all else is conquered. The elves may fear the Dark Lord, and they may fly before him.
I love this.
But never again will they listen to him or serve him. And here in Rivendell, there live still some of his chief foes. The Elven Wise, lords of the Eldar, from beyond the furthest seas, they do not fear the Ring Wraiths. For those who have dealt in the For those who have dwelt in the blessed realm,
capital B, capital R,
blessed realm, capitals, yes, live at once in both worlds, and against both the seen and the unseen, capital seen, and capital unseen, capital S, capital U, they have great power. So while, and this helps me understand the
Glorfindel.
Hold on. This helps me understand the ring better, because the ring puts Frodo at the border of these worlds, just enough so where the ring wraith can see him.
Okay, stop. Okay, let's stop right there. So the ring can do that, and is that just another imitation of the power of Iluvatar? You know, begun by the rebellion of Melkor, the discord of Melkor, sowing discord, trying to create in his image, which is just a mockery of Eru Iluvatar, because he's saying that the Elven Wise Lords of the Eldar from the furthest seas, they don't fear the ring wraiths, for those who have dwelt in the blessed realm live at once in both worlds. So there's two kinds of people that live in two realms that we are dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Eldar or those who have dwelt in the blessed realm, and the ring wraiths and those affected by them, such so as...
are you saying that you think the wraith world is the world that Melkor was trying to create?
Yes!
That's an interesting thought. I like that.
Well, but that's the thing, though. What I'm getting from this passage is that the wraith world and the unseen, they're the same world.
I think the wraith world is an imitation.
In terms of, like, when we think of, like, heaven and earth and stuff, I don't think it's, like, a separate, like, on top, like, the next tier or whatever.
No,
I think
just a veil.
It's laying on the same level, but it's, like, you know.
No, exactly. I agree with that. Yes, I get that. But to me, it just seems like because the ring wraiths, they have, and they even go into later in the passage, or it might have been earlier, about, you know, how the horses carry the ring wraiths, because they have a physical this world, seen world presence, and that's what helps support the cloaks that they wear, mm-hmm. and that's what the horses carry. But it's only when you see them through the lens of the unseen world,
of the ring.
Through the ring, and the ring gives men a chance to see things in the unseen world.
But the unseen world, according to the vision of Melkor, who Sauron is his officer.
But it's not exclusive to Melkor, because the Eldar can see it too.
No, the Eldar. I'm not seeing that.
Okay.
Do not fear the ring wraith, for those who have dwelt in the blessed realm live at once in both worlds. What worlds? This one, Middle Earth,
yeah.
And the blessed realm. That's those two realms.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. So when I see that, I see, they dwelt in the blessed realm live at once in both worlds, as in the seen world and the unseen world.
Yes, but the perfect unseen world. The unseen world of Iluvatar.
Okay.
Well, remember...
again, Sauron's unseen world, which is a carryover from Melkor's, is pardon my strong language, is a bastardization of the heavenly realm.
Okay, yes. Yes, that I agree with.
Okay.
Yes.
And so they're living in their second world is an ugly, pale imitation of the blessed realm or the heavenly realm. But, see, now, well, let's just throw it out to the listeners.
Well, no, not yet.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they can.
He's hanging on.
Okay, so then what I'm getting then is that there are two unseen worlds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. See, I was...
good and bad.
Okay, so... But they still coexist together. Because the ring wraiths can see the elves, and the elves can see the ring wraiths.
No, remember, the ring wraiths can't see without the help of their horses.
Yeah.
They can
smell
Glorfindel, because, remember, when Frodo is in the wraith world via the ring... and he can see the riders, and they're white. Yeah. You also see Glorfindel, who is also white.
Well, we didn't know that until this next paragraph.
Oh.
I thought that I saw a white figure that shone and did not grow dim like the others. Was that Glorfindel then? Yes. You saw him for a moment as he is upon the other side. Mm-hmm. One of the mighty of the firstborn. He is an elf lord of a house of princess. See, you saw him for a moment as he is upon the other side. He's one of the mighty.
And that's what the ring rays saw, because they were...
of the blessed realm, because they live at once in both worlds. The Nazgul don't exist in the blessed realm.
I'm not saying this is the blessed realm. I'm just saying it's the unseen world.
It's not the same.
No, man.
No.
I know it's not the same.
Oh, then how come I'm confused?
Okay, maybe instead of seeing, like, this blessed realm as, like, an upper, maybe see it as, like, the blessed realm on the left, then real world in the middle, so to speak, and then, like, unseen evil world on the right.
Well, that's exactly, like, what the map layout is, isn't it?
I see it as, like...
because farthest to the west is the blessed realm.
Yeah.
Beyond the Grey Havens.
Beyond the Western Sea.
Yeah, the Western Sea, yeah. That's the Blessed Realm, like, in over there.
Yeah, and Nazgul have nothing to do with that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because neither it's does, over there. And, yes. and Mordor's over here.
Yes.
On the complete opposite side of the map.
So there's two those separate other worlds. One is the vision of Melkor, the original vision of Melkor.
Which is localized to Mordor. Morgoth, yeah.
See, I was which is over maybe there. Just as confused as Brendan as what you meant.
Am I just oh, okay.
Well, no, yeah. So
we just spent 15 minutes arguing about nothing?
No!
No, because we've accomplished something and that Brendan and I both now understand.
Oh, okay.
I think I do.
Oh, great.
Well, okay, let's just go on. Maybe the answer goes on. Okay. Where'd you leave off? There is power too in another kind. Okay. Oh, let's actually talk about this for a second.
Please.
Yes, you saw him for a moment, and as he is upon the other side, one of the mighty of the firstborn, he is an elf lord of the house of a house of princes. Indeed, there is a power in Rivendell to withstand the might of Mordor for a while, and elsewhere other powers still dwell. There is power, too, of another kind in the Shire. But all such places will soon become islands under siege if things go on as they are going. The Elf Lord is putting
Dark forth... Dark Lord.
Oh, thank you. The Dark Lord is putting forth all his strength. I just want to focus on that that another kind of power in the Shire, which I think is the kind of power that Gandalf has been bolstering with the hobbits the whole time. You know, that power of courage, the power of doing the small things the right way, or
you know,
doing the small little things along the way.
You know what C.S. Lewis would describe it as?
Hey.
The deeper magic. That's what I picture.
Yes,
okay. The deeper magic. And Aslan says about the witch, if she understood the deeper magic, but she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's another kind of power.
Right on. Still, he said...
That was for Kate in Texas, a little Narnia reference there.
Oh, there you go. Wait, Kate or Kathleen?
Kate. Well, it's short for Kathleen.
Oh, that is. Okay.
Or right. Catherine.
Okay.
But she... Kate.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
Still, he said, standing suddenly up and sticking out his chin, while his beard went stiff and straight like bristling wire, we must keep up our courage. You will soon be well if I do not talk you to death, and you are in Rivendell, and you need not worry about anything for the present. Michael, we've heard that before. Where have we heard that before? Oh,
Strider.
Oh wait, that's not what I was talking
about. Oh, what were you talking about?
Bombadil.
Well, go carry on your thought.
Well, just that Bombadil was the house of refreshment.
Yes.
Bombadil's house was the house where they could rest.
Yes.
After being almost eaten alive by Old Man Willow.
Yes.
And drowned by Old Man Willow.
But what did we say in our introduction to this episode? Strider has said it all along. Don't lose hope.
Mm-hmm.
Persevere. Mm-hmm. Because in Elrond's house, the tables are full. Right? There will be comfort. There will be healing. There will be refreshment.
Hey.
There will be all of these things. This is what he has been encouraging the hobbits all along the way. We'll have some more to say about that if we get any deeper into the chapter ever. Let's go back to this two realms thing.
Wait, really?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm putting that on a back burner right now.
Hey, Micah, as Brendan refines his place in the book, where are we in Lord of the Rings Online right now?
We're in the last homely house in a room that I've only now just discovered because I think it came out with an update. It's a hall of rest, so possibly where Frodo spent his time recuperation? Recovering.
Yes.
Possibly.
I don't know. It could be. And
what's it called again?
It's called Thamesend, the Hall of Rest.
The Hall of Rest. That's what Strider has been those encouraging words. Encouraging words from the king. Okay. Where are we? Two realms.
What?
No, two different realms. No. Oh, okay.
No.
Goodbye, two different realms. We are leaving you.
we're putting you on the back burner, bringing up the skillet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, still, he said, standing suddenly up, so on and so forth. You are in Rivendell, and you need not worry about anything for the present. I haven't any courage to keep up, said Frodo. But I am not worried at the moment. Just give me news of my friends, and tell me the end of the affair at the ford, as I keep on asking, and I shall be content with the present. After that, I shall have another sleep, I think, and I shan't be able to close my eyes until you have finished the story for me. Gandalf moved in his chair and took a good look at Frodo. The color had come back to his face as his eyes were clear, fully awake and aware. He was smiling, and there seemed to be little wrong with him. But to the wizard's eye, there was a faint change, just a hint, as it were, of transparency
about him,
and especially about the left hand that lay upon the coverlet, that lay outside upon the coverlet. Still, that must be expected, Gandalf said to himself. He is not half through yet, and to what he will come in the end, not even Elrond can foretell. Not to evil, I think. He may become like a glass filled with a clear light for eyes to see that can.
And I like how
Tolkien, just in these few pages, has shifted, or can shift. I mean, he's like an omniscient author, a third person omniscient. He goes from inside Frodo's head to inside Gandalf's head.
Yeah,
and we hear what Gandalf says to himself.
What's it called when the author only goes inside one person's head?
Third person limited.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be as if this were being told strictly through Frodo's perspective. But since we know Gandalf's inner thoughts.
And thank you, Tolkien, for putting us inside each of these characters.
Yeah, personally, I have such a hard time getting into books that's only one character.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be shifting around and, you know, get the different perspectives, mm-hmm. you know, and the different storytelling types.
Because it just enriches
I would imagine that would be harder to do as an author.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You look splendid, he said aloud, Gandalf speaking again. I will risk a brief tale without consulting Elrond, but quite brief, mind you. And then you must sleep again. This is what happened as far as I can gather. The riders made straight for you as soon as you fled. They did not need the guidance of their horses any longer. You had become visible to them, being already on the threshold of their world.
Of their world. Two realms.
No.
Michael, I know it's their world. Their world as in the unseen world.
Are you saying that they overlap, the two unseen worlds?
Yes.
Okay,
it's
I agree.
It's an overlay.
Yes, I agree.
Yes, that's what I was saying. How could Glorfindel see
them?
Then
why are we arguing?
I don't know. I don't know.
I agree with you all along.
I was just trying to understand.
You are just contentious.
Oh, man, we're not going to
We have a comment in the chat room.
Oh, hey.
Let me see if I can... I'm not able to widen this over here, so I'm not. It's cut off. I would have loved if Tolkien had. Oh, why is it cut off?
I would have loved it if Tolkien had a short chapter for one of the Easterlings as they were ambushed by the Rangers of Ithilien.
Uh huh.
Of Ithilien. So we could learn more of his home and lifestyle.
Ah.
Oh.
Wait, what was the. Sorry.
Oh, wait. Rewind. Wait.
I was reading the book real quick.
There's more. Someone said, ha-ha. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Okay. I would have loved it if Tolkien had a short chapter for one of the Easterlings. What does he mean by Easterling?
Can we tell him that?
No.
No.
No, not yet.
Okay.
So, heads up, I don't know what an Easterling is.
I agree with you, Commander. That would be cool.
Yes. Okay, well, Micah and Michael agree with you.
Eothron.
Good. I'm glad you... Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so here's what happened as far as I can gather. The riders made straight for you as soon as you fled. They did not need the guidance of their horses any longer. You had become visible to them, being already on the threshold of their world. And also the ring drew them. Your friend sprang aside off the road, or they would have been ridden down.
So those were those little figures running about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They knew that nothing could save you if a white horse could not. And he and
if
just
the
if
white
the
horse,
white horse,
yeah.
Yeah, because he was riding on, was that Glorfindel's horse?
Yes, he was.
And that white horse was especially gifted at making his destination.
Yes.
Safely. The riders were too swift to overtake and too many to oppose. On foot, even Glorfindel and Aragorn together could not withstand all the nine at once. When the ring wraiths were swept by, your friends ran up behind. Close to the ford, there is a small hollow beside the road masked by a few stunted trees. There, they hastily kindled fire, for Glorfindel knew that a flood would come down if the riders tried to cross. And then he would have to deal with any that were left on his side of the river. The moment the flood appeared, he rushed out, followed by Aragorn and the others with flaming brands. Caught between fire and water, and seeing an elf lord revealed in his wrath, they were dismayed, and their horses were stricken with madness. Three were carried away by the first assault of the flood, and the others were now hurled into the water by their horses and by their horses and overwhelmed. And that's the end of the Black Riders? Nope. Sorry, guy.
No.
But let's get down just a little bit. Who made the flood? Said Frodo. Elrond commanded it, answered Gandalf.
Now, this goes back to our discussion last episode about the Red Sea, the parting of the Red Sea.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, he says, the river of this valley is under his power, and it will rise in anger when he has great need to bar the ford. That's why Glorfindel knew that if the ringwraiths got near to the ford, that a flood would come. As soon as the captain of the ringwraiths rode into the water, the flood was released. And so in that Red Sea motif, Elrond is a picture in this case of God, of Yahweh, controlling this. Now, here goes Gandalf. If I may say so, I added a few touches of my own. You know, you may not have noticed, but some of the waves took the form of great white horses with shining white riders. And there were many rolling and grinding boulders. Now, here's his touches, and I just picture, because remember, according to Peter Kraft, Gandalf is the prophet of the prophet, priest, and king motif. And so I just see Moses and God. You know, here's Elrond in control, mm-hmm. and it's really, it's Gandalf as the Moses figure with the staff, you know, just adding the little touches,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
get your staff and yeah, where
the formalities.
Yes. Yeah. So I like that. So that kind of go back, listeners, and on the last episode in that conversation that we had about the Red Sea and the Ford of Bruin. And I think those will be your Christian themes for this episode.
And I like how it says, for a moment, I was afraid that we had let loose too fierce a wrath and the flood would get out of hand and wash you all away. There is a great vigor in the waters that come down from the snows of the misty mountains.
Mm.
Hey. Okay, so Gandalf finishes up his story time. Gandalf looked quickly at Frodo, but he had shut his eyes. Yes, you are all safe for the present. Soon there will be feasting and merrymaking to celebrate the victory at the Ford of Bruinen, and you will all be there in places of honor. Well, splendid, said Frodo. That is wonderful. Or it is wonderful that Elrond and Glorfindel and such great lords, not to mention Strider, should take so much trouble to show me so much kindness.
Mm.
There's that theme again.
Yes.
Well, there are many reasons why they should, said Gandalf, smiling. I am one good reason. The ring is another. You are the ring bearer, and you are the heir of Bilbo, the ring finder. Dear Bilbo, Frodo said sleepily, I wonder where he is, and I wish he were here and could hear all about it. It would have made him laugh. The cow jumped over the moon, the poor old troll, and with that, he fell fast asleep.
you know, let's read just a few more sentences here, and then we will finish up for today.
Mm-hmm.
Frodo was now safe in the last homely house east of the sea. That house was, as Bilbo had long ago reported, a perfect house. Whether you like food or sleep or storytelling or singing or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all, merely to be there was a cure for weariness, fear, and sadness. That is what I want to pick up on, that theme, on the next episode of the Secret Fire Podcast.
We need say no more. We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No, don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
We didn't get very far in this chapter, but I do think, I agree with you guys, it was important to dwell on what was being said. Frodo needed some answers, and he finally got at least some answers.
Mm-hmm.
He's been looking for Gandalf for so long. You know, right from when they left Bag End, he was looking for Gandalf. Oh, well, he's going to have to catch up with us, you know, down the road a little ways.
In this chapter, there were answers to questions that have not even yet been asked.
Oh, really?
Dad, help me remember to bring up later that line about the waters from the snows of the Misty Mountains.
Okay.
With vigor. Help me to remember that later on. I think you know what I'm talking about.
All right. Yeah, what'd you think of this? What could we call this, Brendan? Is there a technical term for what we just experienced?
No, it's just... you could think of it in terms of resetting the stasis of the world.
I like that.
Like the stasis being the world at rest. You know, not to make too much of the word rest, because that's exactly what the hobbits are doing here in Rivendell. But, you know, when you talk about stasis, talking about things where the world... In the episode we recorded of Finding Christ in Cinema, we talked about the world of the play. And, you know, theater's my background, listeners. And when you're analyzing a text, you have to consider the world of the play, like what happens in this world. Not just the physical descriptions of it, but what works in this world. What are the workings?
What are the rules?
What are the rules of this world? Like, what can you do? What cannot you do? And with Rivendell being the new atmosphere, not only is it a place of rest and refreshment, but it's also a place of learning what has happened, of becoming aware of what's really going on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, what little glimpse we saw of that and what we just covered, how much more of that are we going to talk about when we finish this chapter, and then how much more compounded on top of that when we get to the Council of Elrond.
Yes.
You know, this is where the new rules will be set into place.
This is where Strider has been encouraging, admonishing the hobbits to, since Weathertop, at least, well, yes, because of the wound, we just persevere. If we make it to Elrond's house, the house was, as Bilbo had long ago reported, a perfect house. Whether you like food or sleep or storytelling or singing or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all. And I am reminded of, and this is a foreword for the next episode, we'll continue on this theme of John chapter 14, verse 2, out of the Nirzva. Well, let's just back up a little bit. Let's start in verse 1. Jesus says, they're in the upper room. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. It's a perfect house, whether you like food, or sleep, or storytelling, or singing, or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all. It's a perfect house for stasis, of resetting. It's a perfect house of rest and refreshment. In my father's house, there are many dwellings, or in the last homely house, there are many dwellings. In Elrond's house, there are many dwellings. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? It just has echoes of Strider, of the king of kings, right? We'll carry on with that a little bit on the next episode. Are you intrigued?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mike, are you intrigued?
I am.
All right.
What on earth are these?
Replies to the party invitations.
Good gracious.
Yes, we did get some replies to party invitations. And you know what, Brendan? We got another... well, first of all, speaking of Kate from Texas. Hi, Kate.
Hey, Kate.
We she did send an email. She had been having a hard time listening to the podcast.
Yes.
It wasn't showing up on her Android phone in Google Play Music. Do you know anything about... I don't know anything about Androids. I mean, I looked. I went into my Google... account and looked up the Secret Fire podcast, and all episodes were there. Were you able to experience that, to replicate, duplicate that concern?
Yes, yes. Personal experience.
Oh.
Yes, because I have, believe it or not, Michael, I have other podcasts that I listen to.
Good.
And occasionally, and I just started using Google Play Music because one thing that I was using Podcast Republic. One thing they don't do is download with data. They specifically wait for Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
And there's no way to get around that.
Okay.
And there were times when I just found myself, man,
you couldn't get your podcast.
I just couldn't get a podcast. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to switch to Google Play Music. Unfortunately, that meant that I had to leave a couple podcasts behind. But that's okay, because I can still catch up with them in a browser and just download them to my phone. Also an Android user, so, you know, I'm familiar with Google Play Music now. And one of the things that they don't do automatically is refresh the queues.
Oh.
So, like...
You have to do a manual refresh.
Exactly. Like say for example, there's this... there's a podcast that's produced by Nashville Public Radio called Neighbors. Very interesting stuff.
Yes, yes. That is a good one.
Yeah. So, okay, good. I wanted to hear some of the new episodes of Neighbors that have been coming out this summer. They weren't showing up in Google Play. I'm like, well, wait a minute, I just heard a commercial on the radio. Like, you know, go to your favorite podcast catcher or whatever.
Yeah, just like we tell everybody.
Exactly. And I was like, okay, now wait a minute. I got the Wi-Fi turned on. There's no reason why this shouldn't be working. And then I was clicking buttons. And I was just clicking around, and I went to, I hit the menu button, which is, you know, the three bars.
The hamburger.
Yes, the hamburger.
Yeah.
Yes, there you go. Hit that, settings, and then when I went into settings, there was a button that said refresh. Huh, okay. How funny. And I hit refresh, and then lo and behold, everything was up to date.
There you go.
So that's how you do it.
There is no reason why we shouldn't be showing up in every podcatcher out there. So if anybody has any concerns, like Kate did, she sent us an email. And we worked with her to get it. We want you to listen to the Secret Fire podcast. We want you to join us. We need you in our fellowship. You know, we like you in our fellowship. So there you go. Speaking of podcatchers, we got another 5-star review, this time by Saruman 2.0, who, by the way, happens to be patron Saint Ron of the South Farthing.
That's right.
Brendan, do we have this pulled up?
I do. Yes. He says, reward yourself with this podcast. 5 stars, by the way.
Thank you.
Don't know if you heard that before. 5 stars. that's right. You will enjoy this podcast so much that you will consider it a pleasure when you that you refuse to part with it. Wait.
you such a pleasure that you refuse such to part with it.
So, yeah. Okay. Yes. I have been listening to this podcast since it started, and it has never disappointed me, but has ever left me wanting to get more. The trio of hosts weave the lighthearted, the serious, and the curious into a professional podcast that covers all aspects of the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. But wait, there's more.
There's more!
Micah will guide you through the Fellowship's journey using Lotro, Lord of the Rings Online game, as Brendan and Michael dig deeply to tell us what the secret fire, quote-unquote, is all about, and how we can find Christian truths as we journey with Frodo and the rest of the Fellowship of the Ring across Middle-earth.
That's a fantastic review.
Thanks, Ron.
Patron Saint Ron is very handy with words. He's a wordsmith in his own right, and he's a patron saint because he does support the ministry here at the GCT Network, including Finding Christ in Cinema and the Secret Fire podcast. By the way, we got another patron saint this past week who is a listener to the Secret Fire podcast, and I do believe that I know who you are. Won't name any names until I know that that's okay, because some people like to do their giving in secret.
Thank you.
Yeah, so another patron saint, we appreciate that. And we also received a comment on the last episode from Douglas Underhill. We haven't heard from Douglas in quite a while. I was happy to see this come through. He left a comment on Flight to the Ford Part 2, which you can find at secretfirepodcast.com. That was episode number 17.
Mm-hmm. He says, I was listening to you guys talking about the Istari, and how Istari and Maiar compare as categories. And I tend to think of Istari as somewhat comparable to apostles.
Yeah.
Istari means something like those who know, and apostle means something like one who is sent. In both cases, a being who is defined, at least in part, by their calling, to know or to go.
Whoa. I love that. That is profound. Okay, it's not just an Istari. They're just not an apostle. Those terms, those words describe them. It is a missional title.
Mm-hmm.
And being, you know, missional believers here.
Missionally minded.
That is the exact word. That is a profound insight there.
I think that one could compare Gandalf to an apostle, and much more so than Radagast or Saruman.
Right.
Or Alatar and Palando.
You know, I can't remember their names. The two blue wizards.
About whom we know almost nothing.
There is speculation that they were actually duped into the service of the Dark Lord.
Oh, get out of here. What?
Yeah, that's just some speculation.
No proof of it.
But no proof. Okay. Speculation.
Right, well, I know not of what you two speak. So anyway, maybe using singular terms, Maya is to Istar as saint is to apostle. So Douglas Underhill providing that understanding. Thank you.
So all Istari are Maya, but not all Maya are Istari, or all apostles are saints, but not all saints are apostles.
Exactly.
That is great. And see, another thing that I don't want to let go is that I think the one that one could compare to Gandalf. One could compare Gandalf to an apostle much more so than Radagast or Saruman. We won't even worry about the two blues. Saruman left the faith.
Yeah.
Okay?
And apostized.
Yes. And Radagast was just more concerned with animals and caring for them than he was of the mission. He lost sight of the mission. Gandalf never lost sight of the mission. He was missionally minded, and that is a good message for us who are followers of the way. Excellent, excellent thoughts. Thank you so much, Mr. Douglas Underhill, for waxing pedantic.
Yes.
Yes, we appreciate that. Please send in more.
Wait, who's antic?
Yes, Pan.
Okay. Okay.
Pita.
Just making sure.
All right, any other feedback? No, and so we go to the party tree and see if there's any well-mannered frivolity to be had at the party tree. Hey, Micah, do you want to talk at all about the update in Lotro?
I can give the brief overview of what happened. So they released Mordor, so you can go to Mordor now, which is pretty cool.
I can't go to Mordor.
Well, yes, you can, but you just
gotta
work for it. and the only other thing of real interest to me is that they released a new race, which is the High Elf. So you can play as Glorfindel.
Not
Glorfindel specifically, but you can be your own Glorfindel pretty much and be in both worlds.
Ah, which two worlds?
Well, maybe not, three.
No.
Oh, okay. Or all three worlds. Awesome. And what was that about the, like they switched up or upgraded the visuals?
The character models, yeah. Yeah. For the race of man and race of Sylvan Elf, they upgraded their looks, and they're going to do hobbits and dwarves and Bjornings later, so.
Awesome. So, and then the level cap, did it go up?
Yeah, from 105 to 115, so 10 levels.
Wow. All right. Good stuff. Anything, Mr. Brendan Taylor?
Nah.
Nah? You know, like I said at the top of the show, I've been reading a lot of the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien. Everybody needs to do that. Everybody. Yeah. Do you agree?
I suppose.
You don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right.
I trust you.
All right.
I believe your judgment is sound.
Oh, well, thank you. What's coming up next week?
I guess.
Or next episode.
Part two of many meetings.
many episodes.
Which might have a part three. Have you seen the length of that song?
Well, I don't think we're going to. No.
Oh, okay.
No. We're going to have to leave that to listeners to go on their own. Yes. So join us next time for part two of many podcast episodes. Bam, before we go, we have some party invitations to send out. The Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video on our Twitch page at twitch.tv/Secret Fire Podcast.
And you can join us on the Arkansone server in Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com.
You can send us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com, or you can call us up on the Hobbit Hotline, where Fatty Bulger is, I think he's come back from hiding out in the woods. Fatty Bulger is standing by at 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. Now, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at twitter.com/secretfirecast. But let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do, and Kate does.
Yes, exactly. You can go to iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher, and search them all for Secret Fire Podcast.
Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy CDs and digital music by visiting their website at thebards.net. And until next time...
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Goodbye!
Goodbye!
He was tied to the blessed realm.
Which one?
There's only one.
Wait, what? JK, just kidding. We're not going there. We're not going there again.
Tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.